Welcome to Readsy Live, the podcast. I'm your host, Martin Kavanagh. In this show, I speak with professionals from the world of publishing to show you how to write and publish better books. Today, I'm sharing a talk from Beck Evans and Chris Smith about how to build a productive writing habit. Now, Beck and Chris are the co-authors of Written, How to Keep Writing and Build a Habit That Lasts. They are also the founders of Written Academy, a coaching business that helps people build productive writing habits. This conversation was recorded back in February 2023 and live streamed on Readsy's YouTube channel. So let's drop in with Beck Evans and Chris Smith and find out more about building productive writing habits.
So I am Beck, and I am here with Chris, and we love helping writers find a routine that works for them in the busyness of their lives. We do this in lots of different ways. We do coaching, courses, there's advice in our newsletter and on our blog and in our book Written, which we're very excited to be telling people about. Yes. Over the next hour, what we're going to be doing is giving you lots of tips, lots of ideas, and some really, really practical exercises, because we want you to come away with the foundations of that productive writing habit, with lots of different things that you'll be able to try. So without further ado, let's dive in.
So the title of this webinar is How to Build a Productive Writing Habit. But what do we mean when we talk about a habit? To kick off, I just wanted to share this, I think this really, really super quote from Octavia E. Butler. If you don't know her, she was a science and award-winning science fiction author. And she wrote this. She said, first forget inspiration. Habit is more dependable. Habit will sustain you whether you're inspired or not. Habit will help you finish and polish your stories. Inspiration won't. Habit is persistence in practice. I love that. Habit is persistence in practice. And there's two ways you can really think about habit. One way is the way a lot of academics and researchers think about how we develop habits and what a habit is. And when they're talking about habit, they're talking about something that you do unthinkingly or on autopilot. So think brushing your teeth before you go to bed or tying your shoelaces before you step out the door. We don't think that writing kind of falls into that definition of habit. When we're talking about habit, like Octavia Butler, we're talking about something that you want to do more regularly. And I'm guessing that writing is the kind of thing that you want to do more regularly. And that's really what the focus of this webinar is about. And what we're gonna do is cover four things that will help you establish a habit over time. And these four things are how to find time, something that everybody who writes is an issue for everybody who writes. What stops you writing, the kind of things that help you write, the kind of things that help you start and then keep going. And then at the end, we're going to be revealing what we think your writing superpower is. And in terms of what you need, how you pay attention to the webinar is really up to you. You could be lying on the sofa eating ice cream. You could be sitting at your desk with your pen in your hand. We're not judging. If you want to do some of the exercises that we're going through, the simple exercises that we'll tell you about, we just suggest that you might need a pen, maybe something to write on, a notebook or something like that. And if you are eating ice cream, just try not to drop any on your laptop.
Okay, so I'm going to kick off with this first section on how to find time. Now, this is one of the biggest problems that people come to us with, that they don't have enough time to write, and they struggle to make the best use of the time when it is available. And it's a real barrier to building a habit, you know, that we want to be able to fit it into our lives so it becomes more routine-like. And when we've spoken to writers, we've run surveys over the years, and we find about 90% of people don't have enough time to write. So there is a lucky 10% who have enough or more than enough. But for the majority of writers, this is a real problem. So if it's something that you face, you are not alone. And it's also something that lots of famous and best-selling writers struggle with as well. Cheryl Strayed. Now, she is the best-selling author of several books, including the memoir Wild and Tiny Beautiful Things. And she's known as a columnist and a podcaster. And despite all that success as a writer, she really struggles to find time to write. She's pulled in lots of different directions by all her responsibilities. And, you know, she's busy, fundamentally. And the way that she found time to write often made her feel bad because she thought that proper writers wrote every single day, whereas she was more of what is called a binge writer. And she used to compare herself and feel bad about it because she couldn't write daily. She often couldn't write weekly. The only way she could write was booking in a few days at a time, you know, perhaps once a month or even less frequently than that. But over time, she realized it worked for her and she embraced binge writing and is unapologetic about it and a real advocate for those people who are too busy on a daily basis. And her advice is, you know, to set the intention about when you can write, to book it in. And even if it's only one day a month, she says you can get a lot written in 12 days a year. So if that's all that's available to you, you know, go for it. So we found that there are four different approaches to how writers make time for writing. And we've been, as I said, running lots of surveys on this, and this is about 3,500 writers. And we've figured out these four patterns. So it's binge writing, like Cheryl Strayed, daily, there's time boxing, and spontaneous. And I'm just going to go through each of them in turn. But before I do that, I want to say that none of these is better than the others. You might recognize some of the patterns that you've used in your own life. And you might use all of them at different times as well. So to start off with that first one, which is binge writing. This is a very rare, occasional deep dive into your writing. It's a bit like when academics have sabbaticals, or you might go on a writing retreat, but it doesn't need to be that fancy and it doesn't need to be that expensive. It could just be a weekend at home when you've kicked everyone else out the house. Now, daily writing is often considered the kind of gold standard, and a lot of writers really advocate for this. And it is great, but it's not for everybody. So it's really important that if you can't write daily, don't feel guilty about it. It's habitual, same time, same place. It removes the willpower and the decision-making about when you're going to write. And it often helps with the kind of ups and downs of writing. You have a bad day one day, the next day might be better. The third approach is time boxing, which is a really pragmatic and practical way to write. So literally scheduling it into your calendar, treating it like any appointment, it's a really good way to put boundaries around your writing time, to respect and communicate to that to other people in your life. And it's just really helpful and practical. And the fourth and final way is what we call spontaneous writing. You might have heard it being called snacking, toggling, or even time confetti. And this is for writers who have either very unpredictable schedules, for example, if you've got caring responsibilities and you can't quite predict when things are going to happen, or people who are really very booked. And spontaneous is about grabbing 5 or 10 minutes whenever you can. And the point with all of these is to make them intentional, to be prepared to do them, to know what you're going to write so you can hit the ground running, even if you've only got 5 minutes available. And you will find that how you write, how you find time to write, will change over the course of your writing career. It will change over the course of a writing project. And, none of them are better. I'm going to keep saying that. Don't judge, don't compare. It's really important that you accept what time you have available and make the best use of it.
We should also just say that those methods around how to find time were the result of surveys and research that we've been doing for many, many years. So, and we've come up with these approaches, interviewing thousands of writers over about a decade. So with that in mind, we'd just like you to have a think. When you write, what method do you typically use? Have a think about whether it's the kind of thing that has changed over the course of your life. Has it remained the same, the way that you find time for writing? Or has it changed? And if the method that you're currently using doesn't work for you, have a think about what might. And yet again, remember, we're not saying one method is better or worse than the other. So just have a think about what's going to fit into your life as it is right now. But what if you're not sure? What if you may be just starting your writing journey, or perhaps you haven't done any writing for a bit? Well, the key there, we think, is to seek out a similar example. Think about a time where you have had to start something new. Maybe you've had to change your behavior in some way. Think about a time you might have, well, for example, you might have had to learn a language. You might have had to, or might have wanted to, learn a musical instrument or start a fitness regime or routine of some kind. Think about other examples of how you found time when you've had to, say, organize a party, a family party, a work party, or maybe you've had to organize a vacation. How did you find time for those in your life?
And it just struck me then, as you were saying about seeking out an example in your own life, this is where it's a really good way that you can seek out examples in other writers' lives. And one thing I love about writers is they often come together in community and they love reading about how other people write. So you might not have an example in your own life or you'll struggle to think of it, but think about what other people can do. And that can be a real jumping off point for your own experiments with writing time. Now I'm going to share another couple of quick tips to help you figure things out. And the one you can see now is about tracking. Now, often we think about our writing and we can judge what's going on there. And what tracking does is give you some evidence. It gives you proof about how you spend your time. It gives you proof how busy your life is, what opportunities there are for writing. And I really do encourage you to do this as a bit of an exercise. If you think you don't have any time to write, start making a note of how you're spending your time. Some of you might be familiar with Laura Vanderkam, who writes a lot about this and is a real advocate for time tracking. But it will give you some evidence to reflect on what's going on there, to explore possibilities and opportunities. And just making a note of when you write in the day, what time, what your energy is like, can be really helpful, because we often hear things like you need to write first thing in the morning, and that works great for some people, doesn't work for others. So give that a go and find out whether you are full of energy first thing in the morning or whether actually you're more likely to have your ideas late at night. And tracking is a really great tool for doing that. The other tip I'm going to talk about is, what if you've got too much time? I think I said earlier that 90% of writers say they don't have enough time to write. So there is about 10% who have too much time. It might be people who have taken a break from work, they might have retired, or they might have got that magical sabbatical that some people are offered to go away and write. And we find that having too much time can be as problematic as not having enough time. And the way to deal with that is by imposing constraints. Now, many of you will recognize this tomato timer on screen, which is the Pomodoro technique, which was created by Francisco Cirillo back in the 80s. And it's a very simple technique for finding focus and imposing some structure on the time that you have. It's perfect if you've got too much time, but it can also help you structure your writing sessions. And all you do is set a timer for 25 minutes. When the time is up, you take a 5-minute break, and then you repeat 2 or 3 times and then take a longer break. Now, it's really clear, the guidance around it is really clear. But the thing I really like about it is the rule that for those 25 minutes, is your sole focus is to write. And it can be a really good thing about helping you manage distraction, which I believe leads us on to our next section.
Right, yes. So what stops you writing? There are a lot of things that stop us writing, the kind of barriers, the kind of distractions that we have every day, and how we tend to think about them, or what we have thought, come to think about them over time, is that when we come to think about distractions, there are those sort of on the outside, so external distractions, and there are those on the inside. So the kind of things that distract us are everywhere. So there could be breaking news headlines, there could be family distractions, there could be email, our phone. If we're a parent, we have children and family that might distract us. And there are those internal worries and fears of comparison, those kind of what if worries that we all have as well. And I'd like to share with you some of the distractions of some of the writers that we work with. Because for the last 5 years, we've been running these things called 7-day writing sprints. They're just a quick and easy way to get you off the starting blocks with your writing. And the question that we always ask at the beginning of a writing sprint is, what's going to stop you writing in the next week? And this is the sample of 500 writers. There's been thousands that have taken it actually, but this is our analysis of 500. So work distractions, 54% of people say that work gets in the way of writing. Your phone, 20%, social media, 16%. I always thought that would be more actually. News headlines, 10%. Those emotional worries and fears stop 29% of people, or distract 29% of people. And family distract 16%. And what I always found interesting digging into that particular statistic around family was that we also found that husbands tend to be more distracting than wives, and daughters tend to be more distracting than sons. We don't know why, and it's probably the subject of a whole different webinar, but I just thought that was quite an interesting stat. And the eagle-eyed amongst you will have seen that no, those figures don't add up to 100%, because people could answer different questions. But I just wanted to share that with you, just to show you that you're not alone if you're distracted from your writing it and you have any of those kind of concerns. So with that in mind, what we'd like you to have a think about is a time that you got distracted from your writing project. What was it that got in the way for you? Was it one thing? Was it many things? Was it something new that you hadn't experienced before? Or perhaps it was something familiar, something that was more of a recurring distraction. What we'd like you to do is really just write as many down as you can. You can do this quickly now. If you're watching the recording, you can stop it and have a think. Or you can just come back to it later. All of that's fine. But just have a think about what it is that really gets in the way of you getting the writing done right now. But once you've got your list, and once you've looked at all the distractions that you might potentially face, what we suggest next is for you to hone down, highlight on just one, just for the purposes of this particular exercise. Now, it could be your most recent distraction, the one that you experienced today, or the one that you might think you'll experience this in the course of today. It just could be the thing that bugs you the most or happens the most often. But what's the thing that really, really throws you off your writing game?
And again, with those distractions, I find it really helpful to think about those external things. Mm. So it's other people stopping me do things, and the internal things, those fears, those worries, that kind of inner critic stuff can really stop us. Now, I said we wanted this to be a really practical exercise. So, you know, the stages are, think of all the distractions, pick one, and then we're going to move to the next stage, which is come up with solutions. And writers, I know you're all writers, are brilliant at coming up with ideas. And I want you to really use your imagination on this exercise and do a bit of a brainstorm. So the example that we've got on screen is about email being a main distraction. And when you do a brainstorm, it can be helpful to think about all the things you can start doing and all the things you can stop doing. So for example, I could put my out of office on, I can turn off all my notifications. You know, those are, you know, by stop using your phone, you know, things like that. So think of all of the ideas you could have to solve your personal and main distraction. Go as wild and as wacky and as weird as you can, because often I find that that can really help trigger new ideas. You might be able to come up with 5, 10, 50 different solutions to deal with that distraction. So just take a moment to have a think about that, or if you're watching on the video, it might be something you want to stop the video and grab some post-it notes or a flip chart and do. Now, the fourth and final stage of this exercise is to make it stick. So you've got your main problem, you've got lots of solutions there. Which one are you going to pick? Now, you might find there could be several to experiment with, and we're big fans of experimentation, which you're going to hear about later. But turn one of those solutions into a plan. And there's something called an if-when-then plan, which is very simple. I'm going to give you some examples, but it often just makes it really concrete. So if I'm writing, then I'll switch off my email notifications. It's very simple, very, very concrete. It's often called a mental model because it kind of fixes in your brain. And again, it's a bit like thinking about habits. It reduces the decision making. It reduces the willpower. You just think, every time I do writing, my email is switched off. Simple. Here's some examples of some if, when, then plans. And they just start like that. So they start either with if, and then second half of sentence is then or when. So if I feel distracted, then I'll clear my head for 30 minutes with the walk. When I start writing, I'll always put my phone in another room. They're simple ways to try out different solutions. So again, if you've got a moment now, why not write down a plan for dealing with that distraction that you have? Just write different examples in your notebook if you've got that now.
And we often find that actually physically writing it down actually can rather than just thinking, oh, I'll do that the next time, just thinking about it, actually having it, writing it down, putting it somewhere physical. If you have a writing desk, stick it somewhere there. It's really, really helpful because it just gives you clarity, and it gives you a physical reminder of your plan. And as we've said before, if it doesn't work, then just think of a different way to do it. Don't stick with it if it's not working. So we've looked at what it is that stops you. Now we're going to look at what helps you to keep going, and helps you start writing first and then keep going, because we kind of think there's two aspects to this. Actually, it's the starting part and it's the keeping going part. And to start off with, I'm just gonna share, this is actually from our book written, it's just a little story that I think you might like. So Robin Sloan. So Robin is a American indie and traditionally published author of fiction. And in 2007, he was working at Twitter and he was bored. He wanted to write and he couldn't. He was too busy. So he joined with two of his friends, two of his work colleagues, who also wanted to write. And they started writing what he told us was fragments, just little bits, little stories, little thoughts and ideas, and they started to share them with each other. But one day he had an idea for a story, and it was a story that was based in a mysterious bookstore. So he wrote a short story, very short story based on that idea. And then a little later, he set up a Kickstarter page because that story was really popular and he wanted to get some funding to write a novella, which he did. And then that Kickstarter page actually attracted the attention of an agent, and that agent got him a book deal. And in 2014, he wrote and then published his first novel, and that novel was Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, and that went on to be a New York Times bestseller. And it all started from a fragment.
Now, what I really like about this story is that Robin Sloan took things in very small steps. He went from his tiny little fragments to, you know, short story, a novella, a novel, and he used all the tools that were available to him. So, and he didn't have lots of connections, he didn't know how to publish things. He experimented with lots of different things and built up his experience. And often we're told with writing is to have a goal. And that it's really great because it gives you clarity and it gives you direction. But some of us aren't quite sure what our goals should be or how we're going to get there. So the research shows again and again, the way to make progress is in steps. And there's different approaches to doing that. So Robin Sloan did this kind of starter step. So he didn't know what he wanted to do. He was just having fun writing and he built up and gained his experience from then. If you like setting a goal, what you need to do is learn to scale back from that goal. So, you know, you set that very ambitious, you know, you're going to write an 80,000 word novel, you're going to do a series of novels, but you need to work out, like, what does that look like now? How do I make a start on that? And this is been proven again and again, and it's just a really helpful approach to take. Now, I'm going to get you to do another exercise on this. Have a little think about your current writing project. And whenever you get stuck or whenever you're starting out, have another one of my brainstorms. Come up with lots of different ways you can have different steps. And sometimes this can be a really helpful exercise to do when you first sit down to write. If you've got a writing session and you're not quite sure, you're facing the fear of the blank page, come back to thinking of really small steps. So have a little think now, like, what's the smallest thing I can do to get going? I would suggest, like, as soon as this webinar is finished, you know, what can you do in the 5 minutes after that? Is there a writing task that's going to help you move your writing forward? So come up with lots of different ideas. If they feel too big, again, scale back. You don't always have to scale back from really, really big goals. You can scale back from, oh, I'll write 1,000 words. It's like, well, no, I'm not going to be able to write 1,000 words. I'll just write 100. And often if you're not sure which one to choose, pick the one that's most fun. You know, do you want to do some free writing to find a way into it? Do you want to voice note it instead? You know, sometimes we can get that fear of starting to write. So having different approaches and ways to get going, they're almost like warm-up exercises, is just a really helpful way. So yeah, have a little brainstorm, make some notes of all the little steps you can take, and use that as a way to overcome blocks and get going.
And I think as Beck said, don't worry about making it really small. If you are struggling to start, it's far better. We often say to our coaching clients, it's far better to get one or two small steps, to do one or two small things and have those under your belt, rather than be faced with this very large writing project and just do nothing at all. So, and also always remember that once you start small, you can always crank up. You don't need to stay at that level, but just do something to get you started. So that's really important. Just lower the stakes at the beginning.
Yeah, make it easy, make it fun.
Yeah, 100%. So accountability. So over the years, we have realized that other people are so incredibly important in terms of helping you to keep going, to help you get started, and giving you the motivation to continue. But how you work with other people and how you stay accountable to other people is a very, very personal thing to you. And it was very interesting that when we were writing our book, Written, we realized that we had very different styles in terms of how we kept accountable and how we worked with other people to keep ourselves accountable, if that makes sense. So Beck was very fond of joining writing groups. You had accountability buddies. What else did you do?
I told lots of people. Used lots of different focus times. I write best in community and with other people.
Whereas I didn't really do that. I did, maybe it's to do with something about my career, but I tended not to work with other people. I kept it to myself. I tended to use Beck, whether she liked that or not, I'm not sure. I tended to use Beck as my accountability buddy. But saying that, I couldn't have written that book or co-written that book I couldn't have written on my own. I need somebody else. I need Beck to be able to keep me accountable. The moral of this story is that how you keep accountable, how you keep motivated, is a very personal thing to you. This might sound like a stuck record. There's no good way to do it. There's no bad way to do it. There's no one approach that's better than the other. So what we'd like you to do is just to have a think now about how you work with other people to keep going. How can other people help you to keep motivated with the writing? What groups, relationships, partnerships, or organizations, could be of use to you? Now, within the world of writing, there are so many different things to try, so many groups you could be involved with, writing groups. Some have all different structures. Some are very supportive and very nurturing and encouraging. Others are more based around giving you direct feedback. Again, have a think about what would work for you. And whether you want something that's more formal, say like a mentorship program or a course, or something more informal. Maybe it would work just working with one other person, just telling one other person or a family member what you're doing. And if you don't know, and again, going back to the kind of stuff that I was saying before, if you've only just started writing or you're not really sure, just have a think about a different time when you've tried to achieve something, again, organize something, start a fitness routine. How have other people helped you in that? Are you the kind of person that needs somebody else spurring you on, or can you do that on your own? Just have a think, and again, put it in the chat or just write it down in your own time.
Yeah. Yeah. And as well as coming up with ideas, you might also be already thinking things that you know doesn't work.
Yes.
You know, if you think, oh my gosh, I really don't like it when other people give me deadlines, you rebel against those. That's a really helpful thing for you to know and to build into your toolkit. So yeah, so as well as coming up with possibilities to try, thinking about what has worked, to think about what really hasn't, because that can direct us sometimes a bit more strongly. Okay. I'm going to give another couple of quick tips. And the first one is to be kind to yourself. If you want to write, writing can be really hard. We're often working at the level of our own skill and craft, and we judge it. So be as kind to yourself as you are to others in your writing community. Writers are incredibly supportive of each other, so be your own best friend on this. And this part of this is also accepting when you can't write. So you might set yourselves very high standards. You might be a perfectionist, and you know, that's fine if that's what keeps you motivated. But if you fall short, don't judge yourself. Learn from that. See that as something that we get thrown off course. So accept that. If you can't write, accept that, move on, be kind to yourself. It's really, really important if you're going to keep going for the long haul. And I know many of you have ambitious plans for many, many books and series to come. The other tip I'm going to suggest is associating positive things with your writing. Again, writers can be very hard on themselves and their writing, and the way our brains work is we're more likely to attach and remember the negative. So we might have to make a bit more of an effort to think about positive things. And this is an exercise that I do and lots of other people do, and it's based in positive psychology, and it's just called three good things. So at the end of a writing session, find something good about your writing. Make it part of your close down routine, and it will make you feel more positive, particularly when you're stuck in the saggy middle of your plot. It will make it easier for you to come back to your writing because you're associating positive feelings with your writing.
Right, so we're nearly at the end, but we're going to reveal what your writing superpower is. And this is very important to our coaching model, our approach, and it's also really the heart of the book in terms of what we suggest people do. Over the years, we've really learned that one thing can be quite transformative for your writing process, and it's a very simple thing, and it's this: it's noticing. If you don't notice what it is that works and what doesn't work for you with your writing, and also if you don't notice what doesn't work as well, then you'll always struggle to act. It's the reason why over the last 30 minutes or so, we have asked you to notice how you spend time, how you use time for writing, to notice what it is that gets in the way, that distracts you. It's why we've asked you to notice what works as well. What is it that helps? Noticing gives you a power. It gives you the power to change your behavior, because if you don't notice, you're not going to be able to change. And it's a very simple idea, but it's based in the work of this psychologist. She's called Ellen J. Langer. She's a professor of psychology at Harvard University, and her approach is about being more mindful about how you live and how you work. And I'm just going to end really with this quote, which I think is really powerful. It says, "The rules you were given were the rules that worked for the person who created them. And the more different you are from that person, the worse they're going to work for you." When you're mindful, rules, routines, and goals guide you. They don't govern you. And I kind of think that's a really liberating thought. And I think it's something that can not only guide your writing, actually, but can guide your life.
So just to wrap it all up with a quick slide on our approach and how you can put this into action. So you might have come up with ideas over the past 45 minutes, which is great. So what we want you to do is to start by testing them out. And you've brainstormed a few things. You might be able to pick and choose those that you want to run experiments with. So for example, on time, you might have heard that other writers like to get up at 5 a.m. and write. by all means, run that as a bit of an experiment. If it doesn't work, you can forget about it and forget about feeling guilty that you're not the sort of writer who gets up at 5 a.m. to write. And you're going to do that. You're going to notice what works and what doesn't. So try out different approaches, notice them, and then reflect on that. Have a little think about it. You know, do you feel energized? Do you feel tired? Is it helping? Is it hindering? And then based on that reflection, adapt and change your behavior as a result. And these are really low stakes, quick experiments. These aren't big, grand approaches, because you want to be able to cycle through things to figure things out as quickly as possible. And the more likely you do that, the more likely you are to figure out what productivity means for you, what a good writing habit is, what is a realistic routine for your life right now, and it will change. So again, you'll cycle back through this little experimentation loop.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Readsy Live, the podcast. You can listen to all our past episodes and subscribe to Readsy Live on Spotify, Apple, or your favourite podcast app. Head to blog.readsy.com/live to find out more about our upcoming live streams, and don't forget to follow us on all our social media accounts. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you all soon.